stressed out.
I call tonight's meeting to order. Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance and remain standing for a moment of silent meditation.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Fire evacuation plan. Please note that in the event of an emergency, the fire department has requested that legislators and all others move at least one block away from the county office building in order not to impede the firefighters in their duties. Cell phones. Please silence cell phones for the duration of the meetings. Microphones. Please be reminded to use your microphones when speaking so that you are recorded for the official record. Roll call. Archer?
Here.
Bartels?
Here.
Collins?
DeLon? Here.
Donaldson?
Here.
Eckert? Fabiano? Gerentine? Green?
Here.
Haynes?
Here.
Hepner?
Here.
Litz?
Here.
Lopez? Mayo? Maloney Brenda?
Here.
Maloney Joseph? Nolan?
Here.
Petit?
Here.
Roberts? Rodriguez? Ronk?
Here.
Waro?
Here.
And Waltman?
Where's Collins getting fit
13
for a
present and 10 absent. Clerk Favella, would you please announce the public hearing? Tonight's public hearing is on an application for CDBG funds for PK 30 Systems, Inc.
How many people do we have signed up to speak?
Oh, it's going to be expensive.
There are no speakers signed up.
We're within the time. Do I hear a motion to close the
public? Is there anybody who wants to
speak? Oh, let me ask. Is there anyone here who did not sign up who would like to speak on the public hearing? Anyone that would like to speak? Okay, hearing none.
I'll make a motion for adjournment late.
Okay.
Second.
All those in favor of closing the public hearing?
Aye.
Public hearing adjourned. We'll now call to order the special informational meeting. I'm going to invite up the Research Foundation for the State of New York at SUNY New Paltz Benjamin Center, and I'm going to turn over the evening to you to make your presentation.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm pleased to be back here. I always like to look at my picture on the wall and see what I used to look like. We're very pleased to have been chosen to do this report. This is the second year we're doing it. We appreciate the opportunity. We think this report reflects some of the critique we got from some of the members last time, so we'll see how you feel after hearing the report and having a chance to read it. Everybody should have a copy. I am going to use slides rather than the text of the report so as to make my points. We appreciate the help of Amber and Natalie and the work we've done, and the support of the chairman, the chair of the committee, Lynn Archer, and also Richard Gerentine, who's been helpful to us in the past and is retiring from the legislature this year. The county executive was cooperative and reached out to offer access to any information we might require, and we appreciate that. And the finance director was helpful. You know, quite a long meeting on some of the questions we had. I want to emphasize as we get into this presentation that the goal here is not negative or conflictual. We think that this is a well-run county with a good financial record. The idea is to build the institution of the legislature's capacity to engage productively and positively in the budgetary process, and to help the county government operate optimally as it may, so that the county government can better serve the people of Ulster County. In that spirit, we're offering the legislature in this presentation questions that it might ask for baseline accountability for performance of the executive as we go through the year. Of course, you have the responsibility of providing the money for the government, and you have the responsibility to making sure that the money is well spent. And we are hopeful that this report will help you do those jobs. special time of opportunity as leadership is changing, that any kind of process issues that you want to take up might be productively taken up at this time. I'm joined in this meeting by Josh Simons, John Clarkson, and Janice, what did you say your name was? Janice Benincasa, who was crucial in preparation of and delivery of the report. All of them were, and each is expert in different aspects, so I may call upon them for assistance as we proceed. So I'm going to go through the slides. I don't know how the chair wants to handle this. Do you want the questions at the end, or do you want them as we proceed?
It's up to you.
I'd like to get through the report, but if there's a compelling question that comes up, let's not postpone it. Let's just raise it right then and there, okay? Okay, the mission is in accord with the charter-based responsibility of the legislature to prepare a written analysis of the report. Here are the things we're looking at in this report. We're looking at paying for policy initiatives. So we're going to look at policy initiatives at the front end of the report that the executive said were his priorities of the year. We're going to look at trends in budget size of Ulster County, trends in revenue sources and intergovernmental aid. We're going to look at spending countywide and department by department. We're going to take a special look at the fund balance and its use. We're going to look at reserve funds, the use of debt, capital spending and planning, and long-term budget planning. The last two topics are both long-oriented and long-term, and they're topics we think that are process questions that you might productively take up. I don't know whether to look at the slides or look at my notes. So the first subject is policy initiatives. These are the policy initiatives that the executive specified in his message at the front of the budget. You're all, I'm sure, familiar with them, having come through a campaign where they were on the minds of the voters and on the in the media. Our goal in looking at these policy initiatives is not to ask whether they're good ideas or not. That's a question entirely for you to consider. What we're asking in looking at them is the goal defined? Are the outcomes measurable? How much will it cost and how will we pay for it? When will it start? Who will do it? How will it be done and how long will it take? Questions that come up, whatever the policy might be, and worthy of answers as you pass the budget, because the passage of the budget is contingent on getting, if you make it contingent on getting the answers, then you'll have answers, and at the end of the year, or in the middle of the year, you'll be able to come back to those answers and see what's happened. So I've taken one example. We look at all the initiatives, and I, of course, don't have time, and nor do you, to go through every initiative. We're available for questions following on after this meeting, at the end of this meeting, by phone. We'll come back and talk to you about this stuff if you want to talk about it. So we can't go into detail of every single point tonight, given the time that's available. We looked at the opioid epidemic response. Now the goal is very specific and therefore just on point. And it's in 2 years to cut the fatalities linked to opioid abuse by half in the county. The county has on a per capita basis a big problem in this area. How is it going to be done? It's going to be done principally in the health department and the sheriff's department. And there's a strategic planning process going on, a strategic action team that's been established. The Sheriff's Department has a program for in the jail and out in the community, and that's specified, and resources are identified. Nearly $3 million in grant funding, two newly appointed sheriff's deputies, and associated mental health professionals, peer advocates, and rehabilitation personnel, none of whom are new. So that means that some resources are going to have to be allocated from departments, presumably that have been doing other things. The strength of the proposal is that the problem is critically important. The goal is clear, ambitious, and measurable. The approach is systematic. The measurement of results is built in, and there's been entrepreneurial acquisition of resources. So those are strengths in this. When you look at the five areas and the three or four sub-areas in each one, you'll find a variety of strengths and weaknesses. The Questions. Who's in charge of the countywide effort? Here we have another program that's in multiple departments. Who's going to be in charge? Is it going to be the newly appointed coordinator in the health department? Is it going to be the sheriff? Is it going to be different people in charge of different things? Is it a good idea to have one person in charge of the whole undertaking? Is it going to be in the county executive's office? Who's in charge? Will the program be fully integrated? Will there be one report on the opioid epidemic or a series of reports from different people at the end of the day? When will the planning process be end and the program be launched? That's not specified. How will resources outside the two lead agencies be identified and assigned? I mentioned that. What about agencies that have contact with target populations but don't appear in the plan? I'm a veteran, and I'm very sensitive to veterans' issues in the county, and I've written about that. We have a veterans agency, and yet the veterans agency is not mentioned with regard to the opioid, attacking opioids, and there are veterans at risk or engaged. So you need to ask, are there other resources in the county that we suggest you ask, are there other resources in the county that might be brought to bear that haven't been included? Where are the resources located in the county budget? This is an issue that across the county budget that the initiatives that are identified by the executive tend to, and this is not only in the case of the current executive, tend to be scattered through the budget, so we don't know quite what they are. Some are in the sheriff's department, some are in the health department. When I asked of that $3 million, where was it? We found that about closer to 200,000 was in the health department budget, and the other, and it was part of a 3-year planning program in association with Columbia University. The number looked a little rubbery, and the $3 million isn't in the budget.
It's not.
It is not in the budget. But it will be forthcoming, I'm sure, in the second and third year, but that needs to be understood as you consider the proposal. So this is one example of looking at a policy initiative. We didn't do this last year. I thought this year it might be very helpful as you go into these conversations to have this example, and then we do it to varying degrees of detail in every proposal that was in those five areas by the executive. Overview of the budget. The budget grows $13 million, 3.9% larger than last year. This is the greatest percent of growth in recent years. There are 37 new benefited positions in the budget. And this is very important because this is building in continuing costs. It's not good or bad. It just requires attention to make sure we understand the consequence over time of this choice. A creation of a new department. Now, this is interesting because those of us who have been around a long time, and maybe some of you have been in this job a while, know that we've reorganized economic development more than once. So the question then comes, why is this reorganization going to be a better approach compared to what we did in our first reorganization or before our first reorganization? Full-time status for heads of two departments, the Human Rights Commission and the blocking
Youth Bureau.
And the county executive predicts that the level of the fund balance will not go down with this additional spending in the coming year. It will be relatively level, I think, down about 200,000. And we maintain the record of property tax cuts in the 8th year, although it's a symbolic, what I regard as symbolic, about $200,000 for the property tax reduction in the budget the size of Ulster County. It's not a significant amount. It's symbolically important and reinforces the commitment of the government to property tax reduction and new leadership. Revenue. We search for these pictures with the hope that we keep too many words and too many numbers. I don't know if they're in the public domain, so we didn't commission and pay for pictures. We use one in the public domain. Property tax levy is down again, and this is the circled area shows that reduction. You know, my friend and colleague Josh Simons has developed a model that's been getting attention statewide for sales tax projection, and we talked last time about sales tax projection compared to our methodology compared to the counties, and we've now demonstrated that ours was closer to the actuals, and we expect it again this year to be closer to the actuals. we think that the sales tax projection is a credible number this year. The range is always... Josh might hit the exact number. What did you call it when you reported that you might hit the exact number, Josh?
Lucky.
Double lucky. What is it? Every something finds a truffle? I don't know.
Every hog finds a truffle.
Do you want to talk a little about this?
Well, I mean, I ran the same model that I ran last year. At the end of the day, our projection came in a little bit under the county's projection, but there were certain assumptions that were based in the model, such as the I based the baseline 2019 tax revenue at what I projected to be last year. It is going to come in over that, so the county's number being slightly higher than our number is well within any kind of range of error and not anomalous at all. So I have no objections to the executive sales tax projection this year.
With the gaming revenue, we use a different data set than the in the budget office or the finance office. We're looking at gaming revenues. We think the gaming revenue projection is it's always a concern because the casinos in New York State that were created upstate as a consequence of the constitutional change are not doing well. But there's also been an introduction of sports betting, which may boost the revenue some. So we think the numbers, the county's number, is a good number. Hotel, motel, short-term rental. Based upon the projections we make on last year's revenue is increasing a lot. Uber is giving us very big numbers for people doing short-term rental here in Ulster County. We think the county's number is good. We think there might be a little room for additional money there. Own source revenue, we made no independent analysis. We didn't have access to independent data in this area, but we did look at historic patterns, and the numbers are credible. State and federal aid. State aid is up. Federal aid is down. We talked to Bert about this. He said that this is usually more having to do with how the state processes the aid and whether it gets categorized as federal or state than it has to do with changing policies. So in net terms, we have more net aid than we did last year. Spending. We looked at budgeted, but there's always a concern with the fund balance and how it's derived and what it is hiding or not hiding and what the practices are and so on. So we're giving you a pattern of budgeting but not spending funds in there. We looked last year in specific at some of this. This year we look at personnel spending budgeted against the actual and the last year, which is complete data, and we show how much money is unspent in personnel on. So there is a pattern in the county of regularly budgeting more than spent. John is going to talk a little about the fund balance. So you expected to do that, right, John? Okay. That's good. And we'll get more into this point. Employee pay and benefits, we have regular full-time pay up 4.5%, part-time pay up 16.1%, benefits up 3.2%. I think we identified the departments in which this is occurring. Some are unexpected for compared to previous years. The Board of Elections, for example, has a significant increase in part-time pay. You can, of course, know why with early voting. So the location of the part-time pay is up, but when the full-time pay is up at this amount and the part-time pay is up, that's worthy of asking a few questions. And we give the specifics of which the other departments this has occurred. This is also a structural change in the budget because it's going to persist over time. Regarding departments and agencies, we looked at three categories. I took the departments and agencies in the list in the executive budget on pages 14 and 15. And recategorize them on the basis of how much of each department is paid for by local money. So So we had three categories. Almost all are all local money, substantially local money, and mostly spending that's contingent on federal or state requirements called mandates. In that last category, there's some fully funded federal programs, for example, for housing. So I'm going to give you one example in each category. We look at a dozen or more departments. And the idea of doing this is to say, look, there's been a big change here. Ask a question about it. We're not saying it's bad or good or not justified, but it's worthy of attention. And I'm sure you're all looking through the budget and the way and flagging down the areas where the revenues are coming lower or expenditures are higher or the net difference year to year is provocative than you're identifying. So we identified and asked some questions and tried to find some answers. Jail is the biggest concern. The revenues in the jail are down by about $1 million or more because our boarding in primary customer for boarding in has ceased the relationship with the county, that's Greene County. And the expenses in the jail are up. Now, the expenses in the jail are personnel driven and they're mandated by state staffing requirements, but there are potential actions that can be taken to diminish jail costs. And close pods, right, Josh?
That's on the design of the jail, but theoretically, yeah.
Substantially funded, county clerk. The county clerk has one new position added and one part-time position turned into full-time. Anybody who walks through the lobby of this building in the morning knows why that is, especially motor vehicles. It's high demand. And we want high demand. We want the activities for motor vehicles to be in the county because then we receive the aid. If the activities outside the county, we don't get the aid. Revenues recording fees were budgeted to drop $100,000. We think that that's a credible number. I talked to Bert about it. He said that Nina Poshpak agreed to the number. I think based upon past collections, I couldn't make the case based upon part year collections this year, but based on past collections, there might be a little revenue room in the county clerk's operation. We took one mandated program, the preschool program, which is very controversial because many people in general purpose government think it should be in the schools, not here in the county government responsibility. But we take an example of expenses up by 2.5 million, revenue up by 1.4 million, so the net creates an additional cost for the county. Debt management. We maintain a AA rating, which is a good thing. It is an acknowledgement by an independent voice and analyst that we're financially sound and we can easily manage our borrowing obligation. One thing that's not there that I think deserves appreciation and kudos is that we don't have to borrow for the cash flow required to make the towns and school districts whole in their budgets. Most counties have to do this, so our prudent management, although some of the things we do to generate that cash may be controversial or debated. The fact that we have the cash is a major cost avoidance. Borrowing costs are up $1.67 million. That's, of course, additional borrowing with additional obligation to pay back for capital and interest. Debt service going forward may rise, looking at the patterns of expected patterns of the capital budget. And then this is a question: we have some borrowing that was authorized a while ago and not been done. So we think it's a small point, but we think it's a worthy question to ask: is that borrowing still expected, or are we still going to do it, or do we want to maintain that borrowing authorization on the books? If so, then how do we intend to use that authorization? John, have I got pretty much the points on this? Okay. Reserves and fund balance. I don't know why I picked that picture. Tax Stabilization Reserve Fund. This was an issue last year, and we went back to it this year. The county has a Tax Stabilization Reserve Fund. It now totals $2.5 million. It doesn't appear in the budget. It appears in the official financial statement of the county. This reserve fund can also be used for contingencies. We have a revenue shortfall. We have an unexpected expense. Well, we can transfer it to a pension retirement fund. This is all under the provisions of state law for the use of this fund. It's good to have reserves and avails, but consider the relationship to the contingency fund, the annual appropriation of fund balance, and general conservatism of the budget. In other words, there are reserves in a lot of different places in the Ulster County budget, which is a very conservative practice. But the and we raised this in a meeting with the county executive, and he says he wanted to be conservative fiscally in this way. So you may have no quarrel with this, but the effect of this is to constrain choices where initiatives might come from places other than the executive. If the argument is made that the there's no money to do A, B, and C, and we have multiple reserve funds, and they're not necessary to meet the obligations of the county or to meet its primary goals, there might be some leeway in the budget to do some things that aren't executive initiated. So that's the reason to ask the question, not necessarily the reason to change. But we have, especially since this isn't in the budget, it doesn't get the attention that the contingency fund gets or the fund balance gets. Use of fund balance. This indicates that this year we're using, was it 3.9 million more this year than in the previous year? Drawing down from the fund balance. The practice in Ulster County is to make up a gap in the budget, in the revenue side, by drawing down fund balance, which has been building up year to year nicely over many years. So that when you draw down that fund balance, you get to a balanced budget, which is required by the charter. But then we don't spend that money in the coming year. So it's like we're taking it out of our savings account and putting it back in our savings account, and we're creating this kind of, I don't want to call it a fiction, but because that's normative, I just use the word, but that's, it's not what really what it is. It's a kind of a practice that obscures what's going on. Take the money out, put it in your, take it out of your savings account, put it in your checking account, and you take it out of your checking account, and you put it in your savings account, and then you end up with more the next year because you're putting more back in your savings account than you took out to put in your checking account that year. John, why don't you come up here and help me out with some of this? It's my colleague John Clarkson who has lots of credentials. Including being one of the controllers, state controllers, major guys on local government. So, want to talk a little bit about the available fund balance?
Sure. So, fund balance, there are two things. There's one, the total amount available you have. That's your long-term savings, and that's what we're looking at here. What Jerry was just talking about was the use of that fund balance, because every year Ulster County appropriates some level of fund balance, and as you saw previously, this year it's up, it's going up again. And so there's a question as to what you want your policy to be on that. Fund balance is good to have. It's kind of one of those concepts. It's great to have savings, and you have it, so you can use it when you really need it. When you take it out, it's kind of, oh, you're reducing your savings. So what this shows you is what the total amount of available fund balance is. That includes all the fund balance and reserves you have, but it doesn't include those things that are already assigned to something else, whether it's spending that you've assigned it to, whether it's under encumbrances and legally reserved uses, it doesn't count. So you have a policy that says the county should strive to have from 5 to 10% of your current expenditures saved in your fund balance. And that's good to have a policy. Many places do not. There is some advice on this from the Government Finance Officers Association. They say using a lot of words, they say you should have 2 months' worth of expenditures, and but they say you need to adjust for local conditions. 2 months' worth of expenditures, if you divide by 12, is 16.666%. So 5 to 10 is not quite that. There are other bodies that look at this. The state controller's office refuses to give you a hard and fast number. But when they do audits, they usually say, well, maybe it should be 10%. It's not their rule, but it's sort of what they say when they do an audit. The other thing they do is when they review your financial situation, look at your statistics, they give you the highest marks if it's 20%. So 10 is sort of okay, and 20 is even better. So that just gives you a little bounding for what the 5 to 10% looks like. But there are other policies that some places do address in their fund balance policy. There are other aspects of it. It's not just the target percent or how much you want to have generally, what you're going to strive for. The policy probably should cover when you're going to spend it, this issue of annual appropriations of fund balance. Do you want to be doing that every year? Lots of places do it. You've done it for years. It's not by itself a bad thing. But any time an individual or government is saying, we have to take money out of our savings account in order to pay for our current expenditures. If you're paying your mortgage with your savings account, you're going to get into trouble sometime. The interesting thing about Ulster's situation is in most years, it's not needed at all, or a very small proportion is needed. So that's something to think about. Your policy could address that. And replenishment, you know, it's if you're down below the level that you say you want to be at, how do you get back there? Sometimes governments take a position that we'll worry about it if we get really low, and then we'll replenish it, and then maybe we'll do it over 2 or 3 years. Most GFOA says that you should have a policy explicitly on this. And transparency. There's no one saying that there's necessarily anything wrong with the fund balance management, but you, the legislature, should certainly know what decisions are being made and why they're being made, and so should the public. It's an important budgetary issue like any other, and so it would be good to have some sort of reporting on this. What happened with the fund balance? Did we really need what we appropriated? Why are we increasing level for next year's use of fund balance? These are all questions that could and should be raised.
Okay, now the next two major points have to do with planning, multi-year planning, and I'm going to turn this over to John as he's wrote these portions of the report.
But
Chris, just make it go forward.
Okay. So, disclosure, I was at the controller's office and had my fingerprints on some of these policies that I'm now advocating. They're very good things. Long-term capital planning. Again, Ulster has a long-term capital plan, probably better than many others, and so that's good. However, it doesn't meet all of the best practices described by the controller's office. The controller's office has worksheets and a whole process for how you go through a capital assets inventory, look at everything you have, do a needs assessment, and then prioritize. I understand informally that may, you know, what you may have here is really a lot of projects, some of which you'll evaluate when you really get close to them and need to borrow or do something else. But ideally, you would sort of go through that process up front. And at the end of it, you would only have the size and shape of projects that you're really committed to doing. After that, the plan, in addition to estimating the overall cost, you have to say where it's going to come from. If you look at all the individual project sheets in the capital plan, most of them have some unfunded county share. That's the language I believe that's used. And I've been saying, well, we don't really have a plan yet for these. And maybe that's because, you know, you haven't quite got pushed up when you're going to have to finance it. But ideally, a plan should have year-by-year budgetary impacts. How much are we going to pay out of current resources for this? How much are we going to borrow to do this? And really itemize the impact. It's a difficult discipline because it makes you weigh what you don't want to do, what you're going to do, what you can't afford to do, and what you might want to cut back. But it's very useful because it makes you do that and plan ahead. And you would have then, for example, what is the debt service you're expecting that Ulster will have to pay in future years. That can be a big budgetary impact. And when we get to the financial planning, which I believe is the next slide, you need that input. If you don't have that, you're not really going through the full exercise. And a capital plan, if you don't have this financial plan, you're not truly weighing it. You're not saying, okay, we want to do this, but how much is it going to cost, and can we do it? You're more just saying, here are a number of things that we want to do. So we suggest you take a look at that if you want to move to the full capital planning process. And that plays into multi-year financial planning. We have done a specimen, is the word we're using, multi-year financial plan for Ulster, using the state controller's methodology. We did it only for the general fund, largest fund, and you know, we felt that that was about as much as we could do sort of for a good example, but not getting deeply into some of the other funds. That takes much more expertise. When you use this approach, it's best if it's integral to budgeting. As the executive is putting together an executive budget, you could also be looking, well, what are the multi-year impacts to this? The examples that were given earlier, new initiatives, you really should be looking at what the future costs are that going to be, too. Tackling opioids is terribly important, doing many of the other initiatives many people support, but if you look to what it will cost in the future, you kind of should as you're making the decision to commit to a program. You're never going to have perfect estimates, but doing the best job you can to come up with a good, reasonable estimate and look at its impact in the future really puts you in a better space. It helps you work with gap elimination, not just in the current year, but the next year. So much of a budget, it's an annual document, is what is this year? What's our property tax increase this year? What are the new programs this year? But you're often setting a pattern and drawing the line to where you're going to be in the future. And looking ahead as best you can, keeping in mind that it's never going to be perfect, is a very positive thing to do. It's also, it's a nice way of looking at things to help you make judgments. I mean, the county and many others have done very well on sales tax in recent years. It's been good, and you've been able to do very well and have the programs you want while also actually cutting property taxes. Your record is better than most counties in that regard. But if the sales tax weren't coming in, what would it look like? Now, the sales tax, good news, can add. Most projections are sort of taking the trend right now and going with that. But when the economy changes, when consumer confidence plummets, all of a sudden everything changes, and you're not looking at increases, you're looking at decreases. So we put that in the basic scenario we ran. And instead of being kind of okay, the absolute level of fund balance is declining a little, but it's not plummeting. If you take away the sales tax growth, that changes immediately. You totally consume your accumulated fund balance within 2-3 years. So that's the type of thing you can test on. And we're not going to go through all of that or all of the assumptions. They're in the report, but we did reasonable sort of straight line assumptions. Ideally, if this were an approach Ulster were to adopt, it should be done by your own very skilled offices in finance, whether it's the executive's finance office, the legislative office, the controller's finance office. You really need to have your own expertise go into it, and then you get a lot more out of it. But we hope you'll give it a try.
Let me just add, this is essentially a wadded proposition. You can, once you establish the premises, you can see what happens, and you can change the premises and see what happens. So going forward, we project that you're going to have a higher growth of costs and your revenues on the assumptions that we used in this one model, which creates a gap, and then you can change your assumptions. But what if we do this? That reduces the cost by this much. Then what does it look like? It's not just running one. Once you have the model going and you got the data in there, you can run 5, 6, 10 different sets of assumptions and see going forward what the consequences are for the fund balance, what the consequences are for the tax rate, and so on. So it's a tool that we think you can think about and see if you like. That finishes our presentation. I hope it was helpful. I'm willing to take any questions and refer them to my colleagues if I don't know the answer or get the answer if you can't hold it.
I just follow up on that last chart. Perhaps I don't
don't understand, but the projections for the fund balance are going down dramatically over the projection year.
Well, it does predict a decline in the fund balance over time unless you change your behavior. It says you change your spending behavior in current year and it affects your out year. So that's not hard and fast. It's a question of what your assumptions are about what's going in, what's coming in, and what your behavior is. And projecting the current expenses in the current year forward to the next year and seeing what the consequences are. It's not a prediction, it's a tool.
You had mentioned about the authorized but unused borrowing authority. Do you know offhand what the age was on the authorization? Is it inside the same calendar year? Is it multiple years?
It goes back several years, and it's multiple years. You also have some debt that's out there at foreign change,
2010.
Which is a relatively high interest rate. But I talked to Bert about that. He said he's in constant communication with financial managers who can, and they test out whether there's a net benefit, a substantial net benefit on refinancing. And but the answer to that is 2010, I think, was, you know. So that's back a ways.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I could, on that question, if we're authorizing, if needed, the ability to spend it for a particular project, if we don't use it, is there an advantage or disadvantage for keeping it on our books?
Well, this is a seat of the pants reaction to that question. I would say it's a disadvantage because when your projected borrowing is looked at by rating agencies, they're seeing it as real. If you leave it there, it's real.
Because it's authorized.
So you might do it, even though you're really communicating. If you're 10 years out from the authorization, you're communicating something needs to be discussed. You know, not changed, but discussed. Let me emphasize that we're not saying do this, do that.
No, but you're raising the right questions.
Raising questions that you might raise. Yes, Kathy.
So on the fund balance question, the answer you gave, as I understand it, says that you based your projections on just the past year. And the past year was a deviation from the past 5 years.
On the current year budget, right, John?
Current year budget. So
we are working off the executive budget as the last year. So what's driving those fund balance percentages going down is the basic baseline projection where expenditures are going up faster than revenues. Expenditures are going up a little over 2% annually. Revenues going up between 1.1 and 1.4. So that gives you a deficit each year, which takes it down. I wouldn't be too overly concerned about this because it's only a baseline projection. What will actually happen when you get to those budget years, you'll have to produce balance. But, and this is not unusual in long-term projection. What I thought was most interesting was when we looked, if you didn't have sales tax growth, it goes negative within 2 years. So that's how the model can be useful. This isn't like predictive to a fine point of what it's going to be. It just shows you the impact of these trends and why you have to look at them long term.
Well, I guess the last part is the part where I wouldn't use 1 year as a trend. So it's a one point in time, and the prior 4 years were increasing that fund balance. So rather than the decrease that we had this year. So in terms of a trend, I don't see that you really presented that. You presented a
going forward from the current year. Yeah, that's what this does.
It's been held steady.
But let me ask Josh, who's made this point a lot, that. The model we're using and everybody's using for the sales tax is good only as long as the economy doesn't take a real turn. So, you know, the point of this is how much caution do we need to have as we go forward? That's the point of it. It's called at the state level gap analysis. Under these conditions, what would the gap be? What kind of risk calculation are we going to make? That's the kind of conversation I think should be had.
So that relates to two other questions or points that I would make, which is in terms terms of sales tax, which is back on page 9 and 10, you commented that the sales tax for the projection of the Benjamin Center was closer to the actual. And I think that the projection of being close to the actual sounds like it would obviously be the goal, but I haven't understood that to be the goal. I think that the sales tax projection I would want would be conservative. That is, that we would want sales tax to be more than we projected, because that's one of the places that you build in some of that buffer. And similarly, I like the redundancy in the tax stability reserve and having a robust fund balance, as you've suggested some of the best practices may be, to keep it even higher than we had grown it to, and that it slipped back from this year. But to me, having multiple places where we have funds in reserve is allows us to respond in different ways depending upon how those monies are set aside and what access we have to them. And I certainly would want to underestimate rather than overestimate sales tax projection.
Well,
our model being very close to the actual, I believe, runs the risk of overestimating sales tax. Then we come in with a deficit. And that wouldn't be my preferred approach.
Well, my reaction to your point is that if you have a robust conversation about this, and everybody knows what they're doing, and the legislature in its wisdom, a majority of the body decides that's what it wants to do, that's perfect. But the discussion occurs before the public. It's not in a back room. It's not in the, and forgive me, because I have great regard for the people in the executive branch and their competence and personal relationships, but it's not them sitting in a room saying, here's what we're going to do with the fund balance. It's a relationship with the legislature. And it's a policy. Then once it's a policy, that's perfect.
Well, just to respond directly, before I ever came into this body as a legislator, I have been to budget presentations in which all of these funds are always presented transparently. I mean, that goes back for a decade. It may go back longer than that, but I have known and what these projections are.
Then you're in good shape. That wasn't my experience when I was in government.
Okay.
Yeah, Jerry, thanks to you for the presentation. But what I would like to do is if you could give us your slideshow also, because it didn't quite correspond with what we're going on, so I was jumping around.
I reordered it. Yeah, I reordered the information in the slideshow. I'll give
it to you. Right, so if you could give that that slideshow also.
Yeah, well, I have it. I happen to have it on a thumb drive. I'll give it to.
Perfect.
I'll give it to Amber.
And the other thing is, I understand the idea, but I believe our best point for our analysis is to try to get the closest to what that sales tax will be. Because I don't think the average taxpayer wants to hear that you're going to be raising more money than you need because now you're taking it out of my pocket. So I certainly understand the mindset that you want to make sure you want to make the tax, you want to give us the closest that you can come up with. And that's, I mean, it's still a guess no matter how you look at it. It's a, you know, just your best guess of it that you can come up with using various analysis. And I think you did that well here. And thank you.
Well, David, again, your colleague, Kathy, and you have that conversation and you arrive at a policy. My observation is that the legislature has almost never in the last decade changed the revenue projection. You know, so that could be because you're happy with it, or it could be because there could be lots of reasons for it, but that constrains your choices.
Right.
That's all.
Yeah, I mean, I think on the issue of the tax revenue analysis, I mean, I recall at your last presentation, there was quite tremendous pushback from the executive's office on the estimates included in the analysis, suggesting that the numbers were actually inaccurate, and so I think that there, I don't think that we approach this as an understanding that it's conscientiously arrived at by hitting a number and then going down. And while it is, I think we all know that it's, you know, over time it's been conservative. We haven't had the conversation, and that pushback was pretty fierce. So I think it's important that we have the conversation with one another, because it does inform how we can use the budget for programmatic input and policy input, which is what our charge is. I have a question on page 14. You talk about funds budgeted but not spent. Do you, in 19, you just did the adopted. Did anyone run the numbers on where we're trending? Do we have any sense?
Well, that's actually an issue I was going to mention, an issue in the presentation of the budget that John wrote up and I noticed too. We used to give actuals, year-to-date actuals,
yeah.
And we don't give year-to-date actuals now. So when I wanted to know trends, I call Amber and I get trends for the specific item. But this is a trend over the whole budget.
Yep.
So it's a big job.
Was Bert able to give it to you the year to date? Did anyone ask Bert?
John, did you ask for it, Bert, year to date?
Overall.
Over the whole budget?
Not at a level of detail. He did talk about his expectations overall that there may be a deficit coming in the general fund this year, but we didn't have that at the program level where we could use it for estimates. And, you know, sometimes even at this time of year, you still don't know because a lot can happen in the last quarter.
Right, but it still gives you a picture in time.
Yeah.
I mean, it was something I was going to bring up to the executive's office and ask Vicki. I mean, I'm going to have to go into my closet because I unfortunately save everything. So I have my old budget books, and what you're saying is true. Older budget books showed year to date. They took that amount of time on every line and showed the number of where we were at, which it may, you know, things can change radically. Things may not have been accrued. There may be bills outstanding. Who knows? But I always found it to be helpful because I would flag it if it was something that seemed way off.
You have to be mindful of the spending patterns of the government. So if there's a major fourth quarter item having to do, say, with paying insurance premiums or something like that, you can't use three-quarter year data to project the last quarter. So you've got to approach it, you know, in a sophisticated way, but year-to-date information is very helpful.
Yeah. Well, if anything, it does what you're suggesting throughout the budget process, which is it starts to, you beg the question. If you see a run rate that is off kilter with what was projected, at least you can have a conversation. Did something not hit? Did something shift or change? And you have a sense. Because if you're building a budget off of prior years adopted or amended, and you have no clue where we've gone throughout the year, you're making decisions about a new budget without really having all the information at your fingertips.
Well, I'm a jolly one note on certain design budget design issues, so I'm not going to bring them up again here. But I remain hopeful if I repeat myself enough. Might have something to help be helpful. Okay, if there are no other questions, we're happy to have had this opportunity. Thank you for your attention. I want to emphasize that we're at the other end of the phone. Presuming that leadership is amenable, we'll take any calls and try to get answers. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll entertain a motion to adjourn, if you don't mind, I'm not going back.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, meeting is adjourned.